There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hollywood, Dono, Dan Day. Dono, good morning, my friend. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm all right. I'm doing better than the Miami Heat did last night. Fortunately for me, not so much for them.
Well, good thing is, you know, no Tyler Hero. You got Jimmy Butler. He's going to step up, right? So you don't have to worry about that. Yeah. Yeah. These losses, Dono, you know what? It's funny. We talk about this, I feel like, with the Heat, I don't know, every year, the past handful of years. And it's these bad losses that they start to stack up. And Miami's in the ninth spot now, and again, they seem destined to be a play-in team. If that, I don't know where they're going to end up. I know that the trade scenario is starting to take shape as well as yesterday, and I will tell you, Dono, I don't understand how these NBA trades work. Utah gives up a 2031 pick or something like that, and three picks go to Phoenix. So Phoenix has more picks to give, and I don't understand how that works. 2031 to me is like, be lucky to be alive.
Right. So and they're talking about in order to get this hypothetical deal done, and seems to be moving in that direction. And we know that Jimmy only wants to be in Phoenix, apparently. So it seemed, even though he originally said anywhere but Miami, right? Seems like anywhere but Miami and 28 other teams, only Phoenix seems to be now the picture Jimmy is painting, because that's the team that wants to pay him long term. So yeah, this was described as the first step in getting a deal done. But Hollywood, it sounds like in order to get this Jimmy trade done, for Phoenix, and it's not going to be Miami, they need to find someone who can take on Bradley Beal's contract and a place he's willing to get traded to, because he's got a no trade clause, and you know, all this other stuff with the picks. I don't know how many teams, this could be a 4 or 5 team deal by the time it's all said and done. I'm glad I'm not in any of these front offices to try to orchestrate a multiple team deal like this, where everybody's got to get something that's going to make them somewhat satisfied with the trade, and also it's all got to work out within the salary parameters. Hopefully this gets done by February 6th, because the clock is ticking here.
Yeah, none of it makes a whole lot of sense to me. They start talking about aprons and first apron and second apron. And
don't
this,
forget, these first-round picks, it's not just Utah's first-round pick. It's the worst of, like, Utah, Cleveland, and there's, like, three other teams' worst picks that it could be. It's just a mess.
Well, the mess right now, and the funny part of this is Jimmy Butler might get everything that he wants. And that seems that is kind of how these things seem to go in the NBA, right? No matter how much, I mean, you cry about it, you throw a fit, and you know, everyone says, "Oh, send him to Sacramento," or you know, we'll do this with him, we'll just force him to play, and he's going to get it appears at this moment that Jimmy Butler is going to get everything that he wants. He's going to end up playing where he wants with the guys that he wants to play with. He's going to end up getting his contract that he wants. So it does appear, Dono and Dan, that he is going to get everything that he is crying about getting.
I mean, I guess for him, you could say mission accomplished, or at least mission preliminarily accomplished, because he has successfully made the Miami Heat so uncomfortable that they're you know, they basically have to give in to his demands because it's untenable. Like him being on the team for the rest of the season, you know, and I can say this as a Heat fan, and I can say, hey, I want what's best for the Miami Heat. So obviously you try to make some kind of a deal where you're getting something of value in return. But at the same time, it seems to be in the Heat's best interest to get this unhappy presence off of your team. So he has successfully, I think, made it toxic enough and awkward enough where you've got a young core on this team, Hollywood and Dan, where I think the last thing that they need is for, you know, a guy who is he's an important, you know, has been an important part of the Miami Heat franchise for the last, what, 5.5 years, has been the face of the franchise for most of that. He's an influential guy. When you've got a young core like Miami's, I don't think you want that locker room to be infected by someone who is, you know, doesn't want to be there. And it, because you can't say that the Heat can reach their full basketball potential right now where you've got Jimmy on the roster. And I guess Eric Spoelstra feels obligated to play him, you know, because you players union and all that. You don't want grievances filed against you. So you have to use the guy when he's available to play. I mean, yeah, I think it is in the Heat's best interest, unfortunately, to give in to a lot of the stuff that Jimmy wants, because I don't think you can expect to be a playoff team and play for anything meaningful down the stretch if you have this situation still on your roster.
There's a part of me that wants to see them go for it one more time with this core, right? And, you know, have Jimmy, you know, take a shot at it here with this group, because the problem is, Donna, if you do this trade, I don't know, like, where you go from there, right? I don't know how you rebuild this thing into a championship-contending team once again. If you end up with, like, a Bradley Beal, who, I don't know, they're saying he could end up with Milwaukee or something like that. And I saw a scenario where he could end up with Chris Middleton. And essentially, you're just trying to free up space and you know, hopefully you do land someone down the road, but there is a part of me that wants to see them take one more stab at this thing, see what, you know, see if they can do it. I don't think that's going to end up happening here. And I will tell you, though, you look at this group, this core of players that they've set up, and it is disappointing that they won't end up winning a championship. They got really close, right? They got really close a couple of times. Three Eastern Conference Finals appearances, you know, a couple Finals appearances. They got very close, but it does not appear that they're going to get over the hump now. And, you know, Jimmy is going to get everything that he has asked for. And you know, this, you know, I would say it sets a bad precedent, Dono, but that's been set long ago in the NBA. You know, the agent starts with all his nonsense, and the players, you know, kind of follows up. And it's been a tag team between Jimmy and his agent here. And, you know, who could be the tougher human being to deal with. And this is where we're at. This is where we are at with the Miami Heat. Man, I just, they seem destined to be, Dono, this like middling playoff, play-in team. I'm going to call them playoff team, play-in team here. And it is a shame. It is a shame. And, you know, you look at the landscape in South Florida sports right now, and thankfully we still have the Panthers, because they are carrying the torch right now with another win last night. They go out west and get a win in Anaheim. They are 28-17-3 on the season. So the Panthers continue, essentially, unless I'm missing someone, Dono, they continue to carry this town. I know the Hurricanes football team had a good season, certainly, you know, beat expectations. They fell a little bit short of what, you know, could have been. Hurricanes basketball, who will tip off tonight at 11 o'clock Eastern. I'm not looking forward to that, to be quite honest with you. It's a little bit of a later night for me than I'm used to during the week. They are struggling, and the Marlins are the Marlins, and the Dolphins are the Dolphins. And if I'm missing anyone, let me know, Dono. But it does seem like we have kind of drifted back to full blown mediocrity here in South Florida.
I mean, are we going to have you know, renewed hope for the next MLS season? They're playing preseason games now. You know, supporters shield last year, they choked in the playoffs into Miami, but you still have Messi. Did you see Messi? He upset Mexican soccer fans the other night. So Inter Miami was playing an exhibition against, was it Club America? a Mexican club in Las Vegas. There were a lot of Mexican fans there, and they were, you know, they were saying reportedly some not nice things at Messi and chanting at him the entire game, you know, the Argentinian versus Mexican rivalry. And then after Messi scored a goal, you know, he flashed 3-0, as in 3 World Cup titles for Argentina versus 0 World Cups for Mexico. And, you know, I thought it was kind of cool showing a little Messi swag. You know, people are very upset about it. It's he's intensifying the Argentine versus Mexican soccer tension. So that you have that going on.
I think it's a cool thing that they've built with the MLS team. I really do. And I know that they have broken ground and they have started to build their facility down there by Miami Airport. And I don't know if Messi will be around to play in it, Dono. I'm guessing
fair
that
point.
Thing looks
probably
like.
Not. Yeah.
I know they had said like next year. I don't know how fast they can build stadiums. I'm guessing it's going to take some time to get.
Unless
the point
you
where...
have Stephen Ross's construction crew,
that's
which
true.
I don't think they have, because I remember Hollywood when they redid, you know, Hard Rock Stadium, which looks completely different now than it did, you know, 10 years ago when they added the canopy, they redid all the seats. When they started that rebuild, they were like, oh, it's going to be ready by next season. I'm like, really? they're redoing the whole thing. Stephen Ross had crews working, you know, 24-hour, I mean, not the same people working 24-hour shifts, but shift changes around the clock. They never stopped working on that thing. So if they can get the Stephen Ross crew, they might be able to get it done with before Messi moves on.
Well, it certainly would be nice, but I do think that that whole thing is going to be a big success for those guys, and they'll play about 5 minutes across from where the Marlins play, and that thing has not been a big success, Dono, as that thing continues. You know, the Marlins, they don't spend any money. We get that, and I'm not mad at it. It is what it is with the Marlins. They are perfectly content, I imagine, just being what they are. A kind of a bottom dweller team that gets a little benefit of that revenue sharing thing they got going on in Major League Baseball. I'm sure they're doing just fine over there. And Joe gets all worked up over the Marlins all the time. I don't because I like going to the games. I don't care. Good baseball, bad baseball. I've seen both, and people don't go regardless. I don't know. The funny thing is with the Marlins, I don't know what the answer is. We've been trying to figure out that thing for years and years, and there is no team in town that runs a better promotion than the Miami Marlins. I mean, they do it all over there, man. They give you stuff when you walk in the door. They give you stuff when you walk out the door. There's discounts. There's kids clubs. They have everything going on over there. And yet they'll do fireworks after the game for you. They'll do like a Disney quality fireworks show after. I mean, they can't figure it out. They can't figure out the recipe. And you know, I don't know that them being some sort of contending team would all of a sudden double their attendance or triple their attendance. I don't know. They could try that at some point, but apparently they're building, Dono. They are building to get to that point. But yeah, man, sadly we have essentially like again descended into mediocrity here. You have a Dolphin team that didn't even make it into the playoffs, a Canes football team that should have made it into the playoff, I think. And I know that the ACC is going to make some changes, or is discussing making some changes. And I do want to discuss those with you, Dono, and see what you think about those. It's very tough to decide for me if it ends up being better for the ACC, if it's not as good, if they want to do this bye thing. We'll talk about that as we continue on here with the show. But again, as you heard Dan mention it at the start in the update, the Panthers do get a win. The Heat blow one, losing to the Trailblazers. It's a bad loss here for the Heat as they're in the 9 seed right now in the East. And the Hurricanes basketball team will play tonight at 11:00. They will play Stanford. And Dono, I don't know how this is going to look tonight. I don't know how the team's going to do traveling out west. They haven't done very well, you know, walking from their homes to the Watsco Center. It has been a very tough season for those guys. And I, you know, again, I'm very close to it. I feel terrible for the staff and the players over there. It just hasn't worked what they've put together. And I hope they can turn it around. I know you cover the Canes, Dono. I don't know that they can turn it around at this point. Do you see any way that Miami can salvage this thing?
No, I think that unfortunately this season is unsalvageable. You know, hopefully they can win, you know, a game or two down the stretch just for pride and to hang your hat on something. You know, I'm looking to long term. Who's the next full time head coach going to be? At least like something, you know, when it comes to college basketball, it's the good and the bad of it. Mm-hmm. The bad of it is that, hey, you can lose a lot of players, you know, from one season to the next. In Miami's case, that wouldn't be such a bad thing. You can also bring in a lot of players and maybe change your fortunes pretty quickly. So I'm already kind of looking to long-term and next year with the Canes basketball team, because, I mean, you know this better than anybody, Hollywood. They're just not good enough right now. It's hard to see them winning maybe more than one ACC game the rest of the way with the way that this started out.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's unfortunate. We were doing the SMU game, and by the way, Vegas has finally caught on just a bit here. Stanford is 9.5-point favorites tonight. SMU was, they were 5.5-point favorites, I think, on Saturday.
Yeah, destroyed us. Yeah.
They could have won that game by 50 if they wanted to. I mean, they did win by, like, what, 30-something, 40, almost 40 points. And I said it during the broadcast, you know, Joe was trying to say everything that's going wrong. You can't do this, and you can't do that, and you got to, you know, play harder and all this stuff. And I turned to Joe. I said, Joe, listen, I just Miami just doesn't have the talent to compete with these teams right now. They don't have the depth. They don't have the height. They don't have the talent straight up. You could break down all this different stuff, but they just this just didn't work, right? And they had a lot of guys leave. A lot of guys that should be here right now. That were part of that Final Four team should still be here, but the new landscape of college basketball, of college athletics, where you can just up and leave after a single season, you find some place that's going to offer you a little bit more money. You can take off, essentially, and so that's what that team is dealing with now. I agree with you, though, Donna. It will be very interesting to see who they end up going with for the new head coach. But I will tell you, you're in good hands at the U. They have the right staff to find a big name head coach and bring him in here. Dan Radakovich, the AD, Joe Echevarria, the president. They will do a great job as usual with this hire, and hopefully set the program up here for some success moving forward. But Jim Larranaga has got his fingerprints all over this thing, man. He will forever be thanked, and we will ever be forever grateful for what he's done to University of Miami basketball, because he got him to heights that I think a lot of us, and Dono, you've been around that school for a long time. I go back to going to games at the Miami Arena. I did not think we would see Miami in a Final Four at any point, and he got them there, and he did an amazing job with that program. Now we'll see who could pick it up and take it from there. But the crazy thing is, I don't know that one player who's on the roster today will be on the roster next year.
Yeah, that's how it is in college basketball. And that's not necessarily a bad thing with the situation that they're in. But, yeah, I mean, I go back like you. I used to go to some of those games. I mean, you could get tickets for virtually nothing when they played at the Miami Arena when I was a student there. You know, when they were just opening up the Watsco Center, I'd go to games at the end of the Perry Clark era and the Frank Haith era. And it was like, all right, this is basketball, it's a thing we play, and we're in the ACC, but we're not so good. Like, I never imagined that, you know, Coach L, like he did, would be able to turn this into, and it wasn't just the Final Four run. I mean, multiple Elite Eight runs, you know, getting beyond the Sweet 16 became a normal thing here, and they had never gotten beyond the Sweet 16 before Coach L got here. So, you know, he raised the standard. I mean, we feel far from that standard at this very moment, but you know, Coach L was doing things with the basketball team that the football team hasn't been able to do in 20-plus years. So I give him so much credit for that.
All right, speaking of the football team, I want to take a pause here. Donna, we'll come back. And I do want to talk to you about this deal here with the ACC. They want to change some things up. And also the Xavier Lucas thing. I know you guys had Darren Heitner on your podcast. So we had Omar here yesterday. And I tried to explain to Omar some different stuff about the NIL deal, and you know how Omar is. He's, you know, stuck in his ways. He just, you know, spews whatever he wants, and so he decides he's going to text Darren Heitner in the morning at 6-something in the morning, and we brought him on yesterday to help That's Omar awesome. Out with this whole deal. But anyway, I do want to discuss it with you, as this is, I think, going to be the new norm here as well in college football. You're going to get teams that are going to get upset. They're going to sue. They're going to cry. And not something we haven't seen before, right? Florida State, they are the OGs of the lawsuit. So we have certainly not something we haven't seen here, Dono. But, yeah, I do want to discuss that with you. And also get your thoughts on the ACC. Do they want to do what they are proposing here, perhaps, as far as the end of the season and trying to assure that they get two teams into the playoffs? So we'll take a pause. It is a Wednesday morning. A lot of stuff going on. Hollywood Dono, Dan Day in for Joe. Joe, by the way, back tomorrow. We are expecting Joe back tomorrow, should everything go well in the airplane situation here. And I know that's a big if at these days. You never know, Dono. You never know. But he is expected back tomorrow. I have jury duty tomorrow, so I won't be here. You will be here, though, Dono. Time to talk some Hurricanes football here with our man, Dono, who, of course, handles the Locked On Canes, Locked On ACC podcast. And, Dono, no shortage of news for you here these past few days as we have the national championship game come and go. Before we jump into this, just curious your thoughts on I didn't get to talk to you yesterday. Just your thoughts on the national championship game, Notre Dame and Ohio State. Ohio State wins it, and they seem like certainly a worthy champion that has emerged out of this playoff I don't call it a mess, but whatever it was, Dono, I know we had some good games, we had some bad games. Everyone's got an opinion on what they saw through the playoffs. But first, before we get to that big picture opinion, just your thoughts on what you saw from the championship game.
Well, envy that Ohio State has Jeremiah Smith and Miami doesn't is one of those big ones that crosses my mind. You know, he had that massive catch on that 3rd and 11 and just had an unbelievable freshman season. That was one that unfortunately got away from us in South Florida. The guy looks like probably a future Pro Football Hall of Famer, if I get a little bit ahead of myself on that one. But yeah, I mean, to echo what you said, worthy champion for Ohio State. Like, there's no doubt for basically the last month and a half, they have been the best team in college football by a country mile. And that comes despite the fact they lost their final regular season game against Michigan. And doesn't seem to matter how good Ohio State is or how bad Michigan is. Ryan Day is always going to lose to Michigan. It's just one of those things. But for them to, you know, 7 weeks ago was when that game was played and lost. And, you know, you go from the narrative of, hey, can't beat Michigan, maybe Ryan Day needs to be fired, Ohio State can't get out of their own way. And then they have this incredible playoff run. You know, so they were able to bounce back from that Michigan loss. You know, they also, early in the regular season, their other loss was to Oregon, and they had the opportunity to avenge that loss, which was huge for them. And yeah, there's no question that that's the best team. And Will Howard had by far his best collegiate game in the national championship game. So that's, you know, huge for his resume. And, you know, Notre Dame found a way to make the game interesting, because at halftime that looked like it was going to be a blowout, but they tried to mount the comeback. So it ended up being a better game than I thought it was going to be. But then at the end of the day, Ohio State still wins by double digits like they were supposed to. And, man, it was I thought the 12-team playoff was good, actually. And I know that, yeah, there were some blowouts, but people act as if that's a unique college football thing. Like, oh, see, they expanded to 12 teams and there are a bunch of blowouts. I mean, Hollywood wild card weekend in the NFL. How brutal was that? It was blowout city left and right. Like, let's not pretend that this is just something that happens in a 12-team college football playoff. Not every playoff makes for great matchups every game.
Yeah, well said. And you know, I know in the name of money, we need to get the best possible matchups that we can get, right? And you know, everyone yeah. runs at the opportunity to start changing things and how the teams are seated. And you know, it's not fair who gets in. It's not fair that the conference champions, you know, get vaulted up and all this stuff. And yeah, there's just such a rush to change everything. When, yeah, you know what? Yeah, nothing guarantees you're going to get good matchups. And you had two teams, again, that, like you said, certainly deserved to be in that championship game. They won all their games and deserved to be there. And for a long time in that game, you did not get a very competitive game. And Notre Dame, you know, made their push at the end. But Ohio State was clearly the better team, and they ended up as a deserving champion. But, I mean, do you, before we get to the ACC trying to make changes, do you make changes right now to the playoff format the way that it is?
I think a change that seems reasonable to me would be to not guarantee top four seeds to conference champions, which kind of, I think if anything, you have your top 12, seed them the way that they're ranked. Instead of, because they do this thing where, okay, here's your top 12, but like the three seed is not really the number three is not the three seed because we have to elevate a conference champion. And to me, I would adjust the seeding a little bit because that probably helped create some of the matchups. And like Arizona State being a top four team that got a first round bye didn't really make a whole lot of sense, but it only made sense because of the conference champion model. So like, I don't really have a problem with like necessary. Obviously, as a Miami fan, I wish my team had gotten in. We didn't. That's on us. All we had to do was, you know, protect a 21-point lead against Syracuse. We would have been in the college football playoff. So, but I think the way that they rank it was okay. But to make the seeding a little bit more simple to me would make sense.
Well, you mentioned the Hurricanes getting in, and they obviously did not, Dono. So the ACC, they are looking at making some changes as well as I guess, Dono, the goal here, right, is to make sure that the ACC gets two teams into this thing. I assume that that's the idea here, but I don't even know, can you do these things that they're talking about doing here? They want to perhaps give the regular season champion a bye, have the teams that finish second or third in the league standings playing the ACC championship game. Can you even do that? Like, is that okay? Do they have to get that approved? Like, how would that work?
It's such a stupid idea. And it's like, to be fair, it seemed like the ACC commissioner, like he's kind of spitballing. Like he's not saying, hey, this is what we're going to do, but this is something we're considering. So the idea behind that, which I don't like that idea whatsoever, but the idea behind it was, you know, we all remember that SMU, they were the top regular season team in the ACC this year, but they lost to Clemson in the ACC championship game, and they had to sweat it out. You know, people didn't know, are the committee, are they going to put them in, are they not? So the thought was, hey, SMU had actually more to lose by playing in the ACC championship than they had to gain. So I think the idea from ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips is, let's just, the team that wins the ACC regular season, so they don't have to worry about, hey, could I actually hurt myself more than help myself by playing in the championship game? Let's just let them sit the championship game out, and we'll have number two versus number three for, like you said, the opportunity to then get a second team in the college football playoff. To answer your question, can they do it? Yeah, the ACC can do whatever they want to. They can do whatever they want to decide how they crown a champion. But on the flip side of that, I don't think the college football playoff committee is obligated to respect that. Like, right, the ACC can say, hey, we're going to have our championship game. It's going to be second place versus third place. So the college football playoff committee doesn't say, okay, so we're definitely going to take two. They could still decide, no, we're only going to take the one out of those, you know, three teams which we feel is most deserving to get in. And also, my thing is, either have an ACC championship game or don't. Like, the idea of making it a two versus three, because listen, there is not an obligation to have a championship game. If you feel like having an ACC championship game is going to put your top team at too much risk, just say, hey, the regular season champion is the champion. Like, the idea of matching up two versus three, like it seems
a second
like
second place game.
Yeah, it seems like you're
it cheapens the game. Right? It cheapens your conference championship game.
Yeah. It's like it absolutely cheapens.
That's a prime time game. That's on that championship Saturday, right? It's usually the game is usually in the evening in prime time. That's kind of the showcase game for your conference. I agree with you completely. I don't want to cheapen that game and turn it into some consolation prize type game. And then, yeah, I also agree with you that, like, are you just going to say that the regular season champion is the overall champion and please let in the winner of this, you know, second place game? There was another thing that they floated, Dono, having the top four teams play on the final weekend of the regular season, first against fourth, second against third, with the winners playing the following weekend in the ACC championship game. And goes back to, hey, let's just add as many possible games as we can, right? And then, you know, run these guys into the ground, play the full NFL season, and you know, see how it goes. But I at what point, like, again, is enough enough? Like, there's a lot of games for these kids to play. If you're playing an extra game for the championship just to begin with, so you want to add two more now?
Yeah, well, and actually, I had thought the same thing that you did, but somebody pointed out to me that they're actually taking away, so they're not technically adding a game, but they're taking the top four teams out of their end season matchup and just reshuffling it and saying, okay, we're going to have one versus four and two versus three.
So you're going to end the regular season early, regardless of like who the teams are. How do you do something like that, though?
Which I don't know how you can do that. And again, and the final week of the regular season, that's rivalry week. Like that's the week you always have, you know, Florida State versus Florida, NC State, North Carolina, Virginia Tech. So it's like, I don't know. You're like revolutionizing the way you would do a schedule.
Yeah,
I don't know how you could just take a team out of like, oh, we were scheduled to play Boston College the final week of the season, but now we're going to unschedule. I don't know how. It seems like a lot of moving parts. I don't know how you would do. Yeah. Actually, I like that idea at face value better than the other idea. But this one seems to be a lot more logistically challenging.
Yeah, how do you do that? Like, let's say Miami's supposed to play Boston College, and Boston College fans have bought their tickets to come down here to play Miami, and Miami gets into the top four. Now it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, now you guys are going to be playing North Carolina. So do they have to all shuffle on the last second and try to change it? That doesn't seem very.
Yeah, I don't.
The conference will handle it. They'll refund everyone's plane tickets and they'll actually switch your plane tickets
and hotel
for you. You just call the conference office. They'll take care of the entire thing for you. So Dono, I don't know. I don't get any of this stuff. I think things are okay the way that they are. They got their two teams in. I don't think you need to change anything. I do think that as far as these conference championship games go, I do think it is tough to penalize teams for losing those games because they are playing an extra game. And I don't think you should move up the standings if you're just sitting at home. I think that's the other issue.
Well, and I think, like you said, the ACC did get their two teams in. So the playoff committee already did set that precedent that we're not going to penalize SMU for losing in the championship game. But apparently the ACC doesn't entirely believe them that precedent is going to stand moving forward, because we saw what happened after the committee made their final verdict. You know, we had all of the Kirk Herbstreets and the Paul Feinbaum's lobbying. Oh no, Alabama should have been in, and this team, that team, and the Alabama, by the way, who lost to a not very good Michigan team in their bowl game after all that. And the SEC did not have a good, or at least the SEC teams that had been, they thought, snubbed, all ended up losing their bowl games anyway, for what that's worth. But yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, I think the playoff committee did say, they did make the statement, we didn't penalize SMU for losing that championship game. Hopefully they stick to that precedent moving forward, because I agree with you. I'm okay with the conference championship format the way it is right now. I don't think they have to change it.
Well, one format that seems to change every day is this whole NIL and transfer portal thing. And we have a new one here, Dono. We haven't seen this one yet. Xavier Lucas, who is trying to transfer from Wisconsin. And right now there are accusations of tampering. There are accusations basically, you know, by Wisconsin saying that he is under a contract. I don't know. He is under a binding 2-year NIL agreement, which unfortunately for Wisconsin and the Big Ten, you can't sign, right? I mean, you just can't. Those don't exist at this moment because the players are not employees of the school right now. I just think, and my thoughts even before talking to Darren Heitner about this, Dono, were that this is a really bad look for Wisconsin and the Big Ten, right? You got a player, Lucas, who just finished his freshman season. He's a good player, He had 12 tackles, two passes deflected, and a pick. Right, so it's not like he was a world beater up there for Wisconsin. Again, he's a player that has a good upward trajectory here. He could be a very good player. He's from Pompano Beach. He wants to come back down here. He wants to play down here. And I don't know what Wisconsin's end game in this is. Are they trying to scare the kid and force him to stay? Are they actually going to sue him and be the first team to actually sue a 19-year-old kid? Like, is that what they want to do? You know, to me, Wisconsin would have been much better served just letting this go and not going after this, because this is happening everywhere, and it's going to continue to happen everywhere as long as there's no rules. But what a bad look here for Wisconsin and the Big Ten is to keep crying over this thing.
Yeah, I think it's a really bad look. And for the most part, the only people really defending Wisconsin are obviously Wisconsin fans. And I think there's a certain amount of like really old school college football fans who still like they try to look at players as if they should have no power whatsoever, which I think we've moved beyond that era. To answer your question on to what Wisconsin's end game is, I can only guess. But I feel, especially seeing the Big Ten, who also made a statement. So you referred to that NIL agreement that Wisconsin claims it's binding. They contend it's a binding agreement. Xavier Lucas and his attorney, Darren Heitner, contend that it's not, and it can't be a binding agreement. But I think Wisconsin and the Big Ten want to try to protect the strength and the validity of those agreements that they're now having players sign, because this is actually a Big Ten template document that a lot of their schools are now using to sign players for, theoretically, you're stuck with us for 2 years, or at least we own your NIL rights for 2 years. But like you mentioned, Hollywood, the premise of these agreements, it's based on the House versus NCAA settlement, which is going to create revenue sharing, but that can't pass for another 2.5 months. Like, the House versus NCAA settlement, the earliest it can be passed, and it may not even happen on that date, but April 7th is the earliest that agreement can come into effect. So the idea that already, and going back to December is when they had Lucas sign that agreement, that they're already trying to bind players into an agreement for something that hasn't passed yet, to me, I mean, if Lucas were to sign that document, 3 months from now, then I think Wisconsin would maybe have a better argument to keep him locked in. But I don't know how you can argue that when, Darren Heitner refers to it not as a binding contract, but as an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, which cannot be legally binding, until payment has taken place, and payment under that agreement has not taken place. So it looks incredibly petty on Wisconsin's side. I mean, maybe, they also clearly seem to feel like they were, tampered with by Miami. And I asked Heitner about that. Like, do they really have anything? And to his understanding, what they have or what they think they have is mostly hearsay, and it would be like very hard to actually prove. Mm-hmm. And guys, like, we know that, what might resemble tampering, it happens all over. I mean, Miami had one of their top receivers from this past season, Isaiah Horton. How is Isaiah Horton getting crystal balled to Alabama before he was officially in the transfer portal? Like, that, it sounds to me like some form of tampering was taking place. And I'm not complaining about it. It's the reality of college football, because if a player wants to be somewhere else, they're going to find a way to do that, right? That if you feel like Miami allegedly tampered, and I think a lot of the ways that this stuff goes down is usually through intermediaries, so it's not technically tampering. Like, there are ways around this. Like, my people will reach out to your people, or a lot of times players will talk. And listen, I'm sure, Lucas, being an American Heritage guy, South Floridian, has friends on the team. He's obviously aware of what Miami has to offer. He was recruited by Miami, and Heitner talked to me and to you guys about how careful Miami was to make sure that they were doing this by the book and that no tampering was taking place. So, you know, I don't know. I think Wisconsin might be using the tampering thing more as like either a scare tactic or more to kind of rile up their fan base, because their fan, I hear from Wisconsin fans every single day, fellas, based on the content that I put out there over the past few days. I hear from Wisconsin fans, and usually their argument is, you know, they attack Xavier Lucas's integrity for not, you know, not sticking with Wisconsin, and they attack, oh, Miami is this dirty program. That's usually where they go. And I think Wisconsin really wants to play that stuff up to try to make themselves look better in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, it's a real unusual deal. We'll see how this all unfolds. All right, welcome back in here on QAM. Clearly, Donna, we are running a tad bit behind. We're gonna get caught up here. By the way, it did not take long to get the Tyreek Hill text this morning. I know Dan mentioned that in his update.
I was waiting for that.
There are rumors around Tyreek Hill. Man, our stars are leaving us here, Dono, as it does appear that the Jimmy Butler deal is getting closer to getting done as well. If you didn't see that yesterday, we'll touch on that